Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th hour Apostolic Seventh Son Congregation. Now it's not the 12th hour. This is October the 4th, 2025, or it's the 14th day of Tishri 2029. We'll start our first on this sermon on this Sabbath day with chapter 40 of Patriarchs and Prophets by Ellen G. White, entitled Balaam. This chapter, entitled Balaam, is based on Numbers 22-24. Returning to the Jordan from the conquest of Bashan, the Israelites and the preparation for the immediate invasion of Canaan encamped beside the river above the entrance into the Dead Sea and just opposite the plain of Jericho. They were up on the very borders of Moab, and the Moabites were filled with terror at the close proximity of the invaders. For the people of Moab had not been molested by Israel, yet they had watched with trouble forebodings all that had taken place in the surrounding countries. For the Amorites, before whom they had been forced to retreat, had been conquered by the Hebrews, and the territory which the Amorites had wrested from Moab was now in the possession of Israel. For the host of Bashan had yielded before a mysterious power and shrouded in the cloudy pillar. And the giant strongholds were occupied by the Hebrews. For the Moabites dared not risk an attack upon them and appeal to arms was hopeless in the face of the supernatural agency that wrought in their behalf. But they determined, as the Pharaoh had done, to enlist the power of sorcery to counteract the work of Yahweh. They would bring a curse upon Israel, for the people of Moab were closely connected with the Midianites, both by the ties of nationality and religion. When Balak, the king of Moab, aroused the fears of the kindred people and secured their cooperation and his designs against Israel by the message, "Now shall this company lick up all that are round about it, as the ox licketh up the grass of the field." Balaam, an inhabitant of Mesopotamia, was reported to possess supernatural powers, and his fame had reached to the land of Moab. He was determined to call him to their aid. Accordingly, messengers of the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian were sent to secure his divinations and enchantment against Israel. For the ambassadors at once set out on their long journey over the mountains and across the desert to the Mesopotamia, and upon finding Balaam, they delivered to him the message of their king. "Behold, there is a people come out from Egypt. Behold, they cover the face of the earth, and they abide over against me. Come now, therefore, I pray thee, curse me this people, for they are too mighty for me. Peradventure I shall prevail, that we may smite them, and that I may drive them out of the land. For I wot that he whom thou bless is blessed, and he whom thou curses is cursed. Balaam was once a good man and a prophet of Yahweh, but he had apostatized and had given himself up to covetousness, yet he still professed to be a servant of the Most High. He was not ignorant of Yahweh's work in behalf of Israel. And when the messengers announced their errand, he well knew that it was his duty to refuse the rewards of Balak and to dismiss the ambassador. But he ventured to dally with temptation and urged the messenger to tarry with him that night, declaring that he could give no decided answer till he had asked counsel of Yahweh. Balaam knew that his curse could not harm Israel. Yahweh was on their side, and so long as they were true to him, no adverse power of earth or hell could prevail against them. But his pride was fettered by the words of the ambassador. He whom thou bless is blessed, and he whom thou curse is cursed. The bribe of the costly gift and prospective exaltation excited his covetousness. For he greedily accepted the offered treasure, and then, while professing strict obedience to the will of Yahweh, he tried to comply with the desires of Balaam. In the night season, the angel of Yahweh came to Balaam with the message, "Thou shalt not go with them. Thou shalt not curse the people, for they are blessed." In the morning, Balaam reluctantly dismissed the messenger, for he did not tell them what the Yahweh had said. Angry that his visions of gain and honor had been suddenly dispelled, he petulantly exclaimed, "Get you into your land, for the Yahweh refuses to give me leave to go with you." Balaam loved the wages of unrighteousness, 2 Peter 2:15, the sin of covetousness, which Yahweh declares to be idolatry, had made him a time server, and through this one fault, Satan gained the entire control of him. It was this that caused his ruin. The tempter is ever presenting world again in order to entice them from the service of Yahweh. He tells them it is their over covetousness that keeps them from prosperity. Thus many are induced to venture out of the path of strict integrity. One wrong step makes the next easier, and they become more and more presumptuous. They will do and dare most terrible things, and once they have given themselves to the control of avarice and a desire for power, many flatter themselves that they can depart from the strict integrity for a time, for the sake of some worldly advantage. That having gained their object, they can change their course when they please. Such are entangling themselves and the snare of Satan. And it is seldom that they escape. When the messengers reported the bait, the prophets refused to accompany them. They did not intimate that Yahweh had forbidden him. Supposing that Balaam's delay was merely to secure a richer reward, for the king has sent princes more in number and more honorable than the first, with promises of the higher honors and with authority to concede to any term that Balaam might demand. Balaam's urgent message to the prophet was, "Let nothing, I pray thee, hinder thee from coming unto me, for I will promote thee unto the very great honor, and I will do whatever thou sayest unto me. Come therefore, I pray thee, curse me this people." A second time Balaam was tested in response to the solicitation of the ambassadors. He professed great conscientiousness and integrity, assuring them that no amount of gold and silver could induce him to go contrary to the will of Yahweh. But he longed to comply with the king's request, and although the will of Yahweh had already been definitely made known to him, he urged the messengers to tarry, that he might further inquire of Yahweh. As though the infinite one were a man to be persuaded. In the night season, Yahweh appeared unto Balaam and said, "If the men come to call thee, rise up and go with them. But yet the word which I shall say unto thee, that shalt thou do." Thus far, Yahweh would permit Balaam to follow his own will, because he was a determined opponent. He did not seek to do the will of Yahweh, but chose his own course and then endeavored to secure the sanction of the Yahweh. There are thousands at the present day who are pursuing a similar course. They will have no difficulty in understanding their duty if it were in the harmony with their inclination. It is plainly said, before them in the Bible is clearly indicated by the circumstances and reason, but because these ancient evidences are contrary to their desires and inclinations, they frequently set them aside and presume to go to Yahweh to learn their duty. With the great apparent conscientiousness, they pray long and earnestly for light, but Yahweh will not be thrilled with. He often permits such persons to follow their own desires and to suffer the result. My people would not hearken unto my voice, so I gave them up unto their own harsh lust, and they walked in their own counsel. Psalms 81:11-12. When one clearly sees a duty, let him not presume to go to Yahweh with a prayer that he may be excused from performing it. He should rather, with an humble, submissive spirit, ask for the divine strength and wisdom to meet his claim. For the Moabites were a degraded, idolatrous people. Yet, according to the light which they had received, their guilt was not so great, then the sight of heaven as well as that of the Balaam, as he professed to be Yahweh's prophet, however, all he should say would be supposed to be uttered by the divine authority. Hence, he was not to be permitted to speak as he chose, but must deliver the message which Yahweh should give him. For the word which I shall say unto thee, that shalt thou do, was a divine command. Balaam had received permission to go with the messengers from Moab if they came in the morning to call him, but annoyed at his delay and expecting another refusal, he set out on their homeward journey without the further consultation with them. Every excuse for complying with the request of Balak has now been removed, but Balaam was determined to secure the reward and taking the beast upon which he was accustomed to ride, he set out on the journey. He feared that even now the divine permission might be withdrawn, and he pressed eagerly forward, impatient lest he should be by some means failed to gain the coveted reward. But the angel of the Yahweh stood in the way for an adversary against him. For the animal saw the divine messenger, who was unperceived by the man, and turned aside from the highway into a field. With the cruel blows, Balaam brought the beast back and through the path. But again, in a narrow place shut in by walls, the angel appeared, and the animal, trying to avoid the menacing figure, crushed her master's foot against the wall. Balaam was blinded to the heavenly interposition and knew not that Yahweh was obstructing his path. For the man became exasperated and, beating the ass unmercifully, forced it to proceed. Again in their place, there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left, the angel appeared as before in a threatening attitude, and the poor beast, trembling with the terror, made a full stop and fell to the earth under his rider. Balaam's rage was unbounded, and with his staff he smote the animal more cruelly than before. Yahweh now opened its mouth, and by the dumb ass speaking with man's voice, he forbade the madness of the prophet. 2 Peter 3:16. What have I done unto thee, it said, that thou hast smitten me at least three times? Furious at being thus hindered in his journey, Balaam answered the beast as he would have addressed an intelligent being. Because thou hast mocked me, I would, if there were a sword in my hand, but now, would I kill it? Here was a professed magician on his way to pronounce a curse upon a whole people with the intent to paralyze their strength. While he had not power even to slay the animal upon which he rode. For the eyes of Balaam were now open, and he beheld the angel of Yahweh standing with drawn sword ready to slay him. In terror, he bowed down his head and fell flat on his face. The angel said unto him, Wherefore hast thou smitten thine ass these three times? Behold, I am not to withstand thee, because thy way is perverse before me. And the ass saw me and turned from me these three times. Unless she had turned from me, surely now also I had slain thee and saved her alive. Balaam owed the preservation of his life to the poor animal that he had treated so cruelly. For the man who claimed to be a prophet of Yahweh, who declared that his eyes were open, and he saw the vision of the Almighty, was so blinded by covetousness and ambition that he could not discern the angel of Yahweh visible to his beast. For the Yahweh of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not. 2 Corinthians 4:4. How many are thus blinded? For they rush on in the forbidden path, transgressing the divine law, and cannot discern the Yahweh through the Yahweh and his angels are against him. Let's do that again. For they rush on in the forbidden path with the transgression of the divine law. And let's go read that again. 2 Corinthians 4:4. How many are thus blinded? For they rush on in the forbidden path by the transgression of the divine law, and cannot discern, although that Yahweh and his angels are against him. Like the Balaam, they are angry at those who would prevent their ruin. For the Balaam had given evidence of the spirit that controlled him by his treatment of his beast. For a righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. Proverbs 12:10. Few realize as they should the sinfulness of the abusing animals, or leaving them to suffer from the neglect. For he who created man made the lower animals also, and his tender mercies are over all his works. Psalm 145:9. For the animals were created to serve man, but he has no right to cause them pain by the harsh treatment or cruel exaction. It is because of the man's sin that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together. Romans 8:22. Suffering and death were thus in a tale not only upon the human race, but upon the animals. Surely then it becomes man to seek to lighten instead of increasing the weight of suffering which his transgression has brought upon Yahweh's creatures. He who will abuse animals because he has them in his power is both a coward and a tyrant. a disposition to cause pain, whether to our fellow men or to the brute creation. This is satanic. Many do not realize that their cruelty will ever be known because the poor, dumb animals cannot reveal it. But could the eyes of these men be opened, as were those of Balaam? Let's read that again. Only could the eyes, let's read that again. Verily, if the eyes of these men could be opened, as were those of the Balaam, they would see an angel of the Yahweh standing as a witness for the testifying against them in the courts above. For a record goes up unto heaven, and a day is coming when the judgment will be pronounced against those who abuse Yahweh's creatures. When he beheld a messenger of the Yahweh, Balaam exclaimed in terror, I have sinned, for I knew not that thou stoodest in the way against me. Now therefore, if it displease thee, I will get me back again. For the Yahweh suffered him to proceed on his journey. Verily, Yahweh gave him to understand that his words should be controlled by the divine power, for Yahweh would give evidence unto Moab that the Hebrews were with the guardianship of the heaven. And let's read that again. For the Yahweh would give the evidence unto the Moab that the Hebrews were in the possession of the guardianship of the heaven. And this he did effectually when he showed them how the powerless Balaam was even to utter a curse against them without the divine permission. For the king of the Moab, being informed of the approach of the Balaam, went out with a large retinue to the borders of his kingdom for the receiving him. When he expressed his astonishment at the Balaam's delay, in view of the rich rewards awaiting him, the prophet's answer was, Lo, I am come unto thee. Have I now any power at all to say anything? For the word that Yahweh putteth in my mouth, that shall I speak. Balaam greatly regretted this restriction, for he feared that his purpose could not be carried out, because the Yahweh's controlling power was upon him. With a great pomp, the king, with the chief dignitaries of his kingdom, escorted Balaam unto the high places of the Baal, from which he could survey the Hebrew host. Behold the prophet as he stands upon the lofty height, looking down over the encampment of the Yahweh's chosen people. How little do the Israelites know of what is taking place so near them. How little do they know of the care of the Yahweh extended over them by the day and by the night. How dull are the perceptions of the Yahweh's people. How slow are they in every age to comprehend his great love and mercy For if they could discern the wonderful power that the Yahweh constantly exerted in their behalf, would not their hearts be filled with gratitude for his love and with awe at the thought of his majesty and power? For the Balaam has some knowledge of the sacrificial offerings of the Hebrews, and he hoped that by surpassing them in the costly gifts, he might secure the blessing of the Yahweh and ensure the accomplishment of his sinful project. Thus the sentiments of the idolatrous Moabites were gaining control of his mind. His wisdom had become foolishness. His spiritual vision was beclouded. He had brought blindness upon himself by the yielding to the power of the Satan. By the Balaam's direction, 7 altars were created, and he offered a sacrifice upon each. He then withdrew unto a high place to meet with Yahweh, promising to make known unto Balak whatever the Yahweh should reveal. With the nobles and princesses of Moab, the king stood beside the sacrifice, while around them gathered the eager multitude, watching for the return of the prophet. He came at last, and the people waited for the words that should paralyze forever that strange power exerted in behalf of the hated Israelites. Balaam said, "The king of Moab had brought me from Aram out of the mountains of the east, saying, 'Come curse me, Jacob, and come defy Israel. How shall I curse whom Yahweh hath not cursed? Or how shall I defy whom Yahweh hath not defied? For from the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hills I behold him. Lo, the people shall dwell alone, and shall not be reckoned among the nations. Who can count the dust of the Jacob, and the number of the fourth part of the Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his.'" Balaam confessed that he came with the purpose of cursing Israel, but the words he uttered were directly contrary unto the sentiments of his heart, for he was constrained to pronounce blessing while his soul was filled with the curses. As Balaam looked upon the enchantment of Israel, he beheld with the astonishment of the evidence of their prosperity, for they had been represented unto him as a rude, disorganized multitude, infesting their country in the roving bands that were a pest and terror unto the surrounding nations. But their appearance was the reverse of all of this, for he saw the vast extent and perfect arrangement of their camp, everything bearing the marks of the thorough discipline and order. He was shown the favor with which Yahweh regarded Israel and their distinctive character as his chosen people. They were not to stand upon a level with the other nation, but to be exalted above them all. For the people shall dwell alone, and shall not be reckoned among the nations. At the time when these words were spoken, the Israelites had no permanent settlement in their peculiar character. Their manners and customs were not familiar to Balaam. But how strikingly was this prophecy fulfilled in the after history of the Israel through all the years of their captivity, through all the ages since they were dispersed among the nations, they have remained as a distinct people. So the people of Yahweh, the true Israel, though scattered throughout all the nations, are on the earth, but sojourners whose citizenship is in heaven. Not only was Balaam shown the history of the Hebrew people as a nation, but he beheld the increase and prosperity of the true Israel of Yahweh until the close of time. He saw the special favor of the Most High attending those who love and fear him, for he saw them supported by his arm as they entered the dark valley of the shadow of death, and he beheld them coming forth from their graves crowned with the glory, honor, and immortality. For he saw the redeemed rejoicing in the unfading glories of the earth made new. Gazing upon the scene, he exclaimed, "Who can count the dust of Jacob and the number of the fourth part of Israel?" And as he saw the crown of the glory on every brow, the joy beaming from every countenance, and looked forward unto that endless life of the unalloyed happiness, he uttered the solemn prayer, "Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his." If Balaam had a disposition to accept the light that the Yahweh had given him, he would now have made true his word. He would at once have severed all connection with Moab. He would no longer have presumed upon the mercy of the Yahweh. Only would have returned unto him with a deep repentance. But the Balaam loved the wages of the unrighteousness. Let's read that again. Verily, the Balaam loved the wages of the unrighteousness, and there he was determined for the securing of his of the blessing that he was wanting. For the Balak had confidently expected a curse that would fall like a withering blight upon Israel. And at the words of the prophet, he passionately exclaimed, "What hast thou done unto me? I took thee to curse mine enemies, and behold, thou hast blessed them altogether." For the Balaam seeking for the making of a virtue of the necessity, professed to have spoken from a conscientious regard for the will of Yahweh with the words that had been forced from his lips. Or let's do that again. By the words that had been forced from his lips, by the divine power. For his answer was, "Must I not take heed to speak that which the Yahweh has put in my mouth, for that Balak cannot even now relinquish his purpose. He decided that the imposing spectacle presented by the vast encampment of the Hebrews had no intimidated, had so intimidated, let's read that again. For he decided that the imposing spectacle presented by the vast encampment of the Hebrews had so intimidated Balaam that he dared not practice his divinations against them. For the king determined to take the prophet to some point where only a small part of the host might be seen. If the Balaam could be induced to curse them and the detached parties, the whole camp would soon be devoted to destruction. On the top of an elevation called Pisgah, another trial was made. Again, 7 altars were erected, whereon were placed the same offerings as at the first, where the king and his princes remained by the sacrifices, while the Balaam retired to meet with Yahweh. Again, the prophet was entrusted with a divine message, which he was powerless to alter or withhold. When he appeared to the anxious, expectant company, the question was put unto him, "What truth has the Yahweh spoken? Let's read that again. "What hath the Yahweh spoken?" For the answer, as before, struck terror into the heart of the king and princes. Yahweh is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. Has he said, and shall he not do it? Or has he spoken, and shall he not make it good? Behold, I have received commandment to bless, and he hath blessed, and I cannot reverse it. He hath not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither hath he seen perverseness in Israel. But Yahweh, his Yahweh, is with him. And the shout of the king is among them. Avoid, awed by the, let's read that again. For the being awed by these revelations, Balaam exclaimed, "Surely there is no enchantment against Jacob, neither is there any divination against Israel, for the great magician had tried his power of the enchantment in accordance with the desire of the Moabite, but concerning this very occasion it should be said of Israel, what hath Yahweh wrought?" While they were the divine protection, no people or nation, though aided by all of the power of the Satan, should be able to prevail against them. All the world should wonder at the marvelous word, the work. Let's read that again. For all the world should wonder at the marvelous work of the Yahweh on the behalf of his people, that as a man determined to for the pursuing of a sinful course should be so controlled by the divine power as to utter, instead of imprecations, of the richest and most precious promises in the language of the sublime and impassioned poetry. And the favor of the Yahweh at this time manifested toward Israel was to be an assurance of his protecting care for his obedient, faithful children in all ages. When the Satan should inspire evil men to misrepresent, harass, and destroy Yahweh's people, this very occurrence would be brought unto their remembrance and would strengthen their courage and their faith in the Yahweh. For the king of Moab disheartened and distressed the strength, neither cursed them at all, nor blessed them at all, yet a faint hope still lingered in his heart, and he determined to make another trial. For he now conducted Balaam to Mount Peor, where was a temple devoted to the licentious worship of Baal, their Yahweh. Here, the same number of the altars were erected as before, and the same number of the sacrifices were offered, but the Balaam went not alone as at the other time to learn of the Yahweh's will. He made no pretense of the sorcery, but standing beside the altar, he looked abroad upon the tents of the Israel. Again the Spirit of Yahweh rested upon him, and the divine message came from his lips. How goodly are thy tents, O Jacob, and thy tabernacles, O Israel! As the valleys are they spread forth, as the gardens by the river's side, as the trees of the ligolos, which the Yahweh has planted. And let's read that again. As the trees, the lignolis, that the Yahweh has planted, and as the cedar trees beside the water, he shall pour the water out of his buckets, and his seed shall be in many waters, and his king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. For he couched, he lay down as a lion, and as a great lion, who shall stir him up. Blessed is he that blesses thee, and cursed is he that curses thee. For the prosperity of the Yahweh's people is here represented by some of the most beautiful figures to be found in nature. For the prophet likens Israel unto the fertile valleys covered with the abundant harvest, unto the flourishing gardens watered by the never-failing spring, unto the fragrant sandal tree, and the stately cedar. For the figure last mentioned is one of the most strikingly beautiful and appropriate to be found in the inspired word. For the cedar of the Lebanon was honored by all the people of the East. For the class of trees under which it belongs is found wherever man has gone throughout the earth, from the Arctic regions unto the tropic zone. They flourish, rejoicing in the heat, yet braving the cold, springing in the rich luxuriance by the riverside, yet towering aloft upon the parched and thirsty waste, where they plant their roots deep among the rocks of the mountains, and boldly stand in the defiance of the tempest. for their leaves are fresh and green, when all else has perished as the breath of winter. Above all other trees, the cedar of Lebanon is distinguished for its strength, its firmness, its undecaying vigor. Let's read that again. Its undecaying vigor, and this is used as a symbol of those whose life is hid with Yahshua and the Father Yahweh. Colossians 3:3 says the scripture, for the righteous shall grow like a cedar, Psalm 92:12. For the divine hand has exalted the cedar as the king over the forest. The fir trees were not like his boughs, and the chestnut trees were not like his branches, Ezekiel 31:8. Nor any tree in the garden of Yahweh, for the cedar is repeatedly employed as an emblem of the royalty and its use in the scripture to represent the righteous show how heaven regards those who do the will of Yahweh. Balaam prophesied that Israel's king would be greater and more powerful than Agag. This was the name given unto the kings of the Amalekites, who were at this time a very powerful nation. Only Israel, if true unto Yahweh, would subdue all her enemies, for the king of the Israel was the son of Yahweh, and his throne was one day to be established. Let's read that again. For the king of the Israel, Yahshua, was and is the son of the Yahweh, the Father, and his throne was and is today to be established in the earth, and his power is to be exalted above all the earthly kingdoms. As he listened unto the prophet's words, Balak was overwhelmed with a disappointed hope. With the fear and rage, he was indignant that Balaam could have given him the least encouragement of a favorable response when everything was determined against him. He regarded with scorn the prophet's compromising, deceptive course, for the king exclaimed fiercely, therefore now flee thou to thy place. I sought to promote thee unto the great honor, but lo, the Yahweh of the heaven has kept thee back from my honor. For the answer was that the king had been forewarned that Balaam could speak only the message given him from the Father Yahweh. Before returning unto his people, Balaam uttered a most beautiful and sublime prophecy of the world's Redeemer and the final destination of the enemies of Yahweh. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Seth. And he closed by the prediction of the complete destruction of the Moab and Edom. That's the Esau. And Amalek, and Edom also represents the Adventist church of Amalek and the Kenites, thus leaving the Moabitish king no ray of hope. Disappointed in his hopes of wealth and promotion, and the disfavor with the king, and conscious that he had incurred the displeasure of the Yahweh, Balaam returned from his self-chosen mission after he had reached his home. The controlling power of the Spirit of Yahweh left him, and his covetousness, which had been merely held in check, prevailed. He was ready to resort to any means to gain the reward promised by the Balaam. Balaam knew that the prosperity of Israel depended upon their obedience unto Yahweh, and that there was no way to cause their overthrow but by the seducing them into sin. He now decided to secure Balaam's favor by the advising the Moabites of the course to be pursued to bring a curse upon Israel. He immediately returned to the land of Moab and laid his plan before the king, for the Moabites themselves were convinced that so long as Israel remained true to Yahweh, he would be their shield. For the plan proposed by the Balaam was to separate them from Yahweh by enticing them into idolatry. For if they could be led to engage in the licentious worship of the Baal and Ashtaroth, their omnipotent protector would become their enemy, and they would soon fall a prey to the fierce warlike nations around them. This plan was readily accepted by the king, and Balaam himself remained to assist in carrying it into effect. Balaam witnessed the success of his diabolical scheme. He saw the curse of the Yahweh visited upon his people, and thousands falling under his judgment. But the divine justice that punished sin and the Israel did not permit the tempted to escape. In the war of the Israel against the Midianites, Balaam was slain. He had felt a presentiment that his own end was near when he exclaimed, "Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my last end be like his." But he had not chosen to live the life of the righteous, and his destiny was fixed with the enemies of Yahweh. For the fate of Balaam was similar unto that of the Jews, and their characters bear a marked resemblance unto each other. Both these men tried to unite the service of Yahweh and Mammon, and met with a signal failure. For the Balaam acknowledged the true Yahweh and professed to serve him, for the Jews believed in the Yahshua as the Messiah and united with his followers, but Balaam hoped to make the service of the Yahweh as a stepping stone unto the acquirement of riches and worldly honor. And failing in this, he stumbled and fell and was broken, for the Jews expected by his connection with the Yahshua to secure wealth and promotion in that worldly kingdom, which, as he believed, that the Messiah was about to set up. For the failure of his hope drove him to apostasy and ruin. Both Balaam and Judas had received great light and enjoyed special privileges, but a single church sin poisoned the entire character and cursed their destruction. It is a perilous thing to allow an unchristian trait to live in the heart. One cherished sin will little by little debase the character bringing all his nobler powers into subjection unto the evil desire. For the removal of one's safeguard from the conscience, the indulgence of one evil habit, one neglect of the higher claims of the duty, breaks down the defenses of the soul and opens a way for the Satan to come in and lead us astray. For the only safe course is to let our prayers go forth daily from a sincere heart, as did David. Hold up my goings in thy path, that my footsteps slip not. Psalm 17:5. This brings the end of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Get one of all your archives. We're going to close now with a song.